the inaugural episode of Scared to Death, a Terror Management Lab production. Today we have one of our graduate students with us, but first I want to briefly introduce myself and my co-host. My name is Dr. Lindsay Harville Bowman. I am in the School of Communication Studies at James Madison University and the director and lead principal investigator in Terror Management Lab. I have my co-host here, Aya. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Aya Nassif. I am a double major in psychology and theater. I'm currently a senior at JMU, and I have been with the Terror Management Lab since last year. And right now, we are going to have our graduate student, Peter Motwill, who is a Bachelor of Science, who got his Bachelor of Science degree from JMU. He's currently in his first year of his master's program in psychological sciences at JMU, and he is from NOVA. Peter, do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, and tell us what NOVA is for our listeners that are not in Virginia.
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Peter. I'm a first-year student here at the grad program, the psychological sciences, in the experimental psychology concentration, working with Lindsay within the Terror Management Lab. NOVA, that's where I'm from, that's Northern Virginia, so I'm from the Fairfax area, and Fair Lakes, if anyone knows what that is.
I think Aya is from Fairfax as
well. I'm from Fairfax, so yeah, NOVA reunite, really.
Yeah, Fairfax, great part of town. But yeah, that's like all there is to me right now. I'm 21.
A man. So you're legal?
Legal to drink, legal to do things. Gamble.
Yeah.
Do we have gambling in Virginia? We do?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
Doing it all summer.
Oh,
okay. Way
really
to.
Won anything.
Well, that
so.
Is unfortunate. Yeah. Way to take out that stress, that grad school stress, right?
Nah, not at all.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about your undergraduate research career at JMU? Because we know you got your Bachelor of Science, so you're a double Duke. And why you wanted to attend graduate school in psych sciences and join us in the lab?
I went to undergrad for JMU, and with research I got involved in the Pigeon Lab with Dr. Dan Holt, and I started doing that my junior year and then really got involved. I think more post, like, what would you call it? Not post-COVID, but like, mid-COVID, when we all came back from my senior year. So I was doing a lot of behavioral techniques and, like, working with birds in an operant box and a lot of just general, like, care of birds. And it was really cool, and it really introduced me to a lot of stuff about, like, psychology. But then senior year, it was time to, like, look for grad programs. So I applied to a bunch of places, mostly pretty far. I think the farthest one was down in Florida. But then I also applied to JMU because, one, I had a lot of connections here still from work with the Pigeons. But then also just JMU is, like, a great place, and I've really enjoyed my time here. So when I was looking through the different professors, I saw Lindsay's name show up on the list of professors who was taking students, and her interest mentioned existential psychology and the, like, belief of what happens after death. So I started looking into that and looked at the old blog website, read a few posts, and I thought it was really interesting, so I decided to apply. And then a few interviews later, got in. Now I'm here just learning more, and I think it's really cool. In my first few weeks, I've learned a lot about terror management and
just like pigeons, right?
Yeah. almost like pigeons, but it's a very different vibe, and I'm really enjoying it here.
Do you miss the pigeons?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah.
But they are just down the hall from
us,
so I'm sure you can go
say
visit
hi.
Them.
I know, I would love to one day.
Did you have prior interest in existential psychology before you came to the grad program?
I honestly didn't know what existential psychology was until I learned about Lindsay herself, so it was definitely something brand new. And I think one of the things that was really cool was, I don't remember if I read it or if we just talked about it in the interview, but I remember talking about it and you mentioning the whole January 6th thing and how you're able to sort of predict that through TNT. And I think that was one of those moments where I was like, okay, this is something that's, like, really, really sick.
So I know this kind of relates to what what was really interesting to you about existential psychology and about finding Lindsay and her lab. So what kind of interests you right now about terror management theory? I know you're still early in, but...
I think something that interests me is how the, like what I was just talking about with the January 6th attack, just like how that cultural worldview being threatened can like lead to like dire actions. And when you predict that, like you can predict something else happening. So I think that's something that's really interesting or like cool to me. And then another thing was something I talked a little bit about with Lindsay, but like I read the news, I think, a good bit. I try to check it like at least once every day. Mm-hmm. And something that's like been on my mind has just been sort of like the trust factor of how people can trust the news and trust different things on that. And I want to see kind of if like there's any like death anxiety built up into that, like just how people can figure out their like how trustworthy they find one news source versus another, and see like where that kind of like differs based on someone's like salience, I guess, of death,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Yeah, I think we have a potential thesis topic for Peter, and it's really great. It's interdisciplinary. It fuses the fields of psych and comm, and I think that's great. So how do you deal with your own anxieties about death? I mean, you've now come to the death lab where we talk about it all the time.
Real question now.
Yeah.
Light topic.
That's a great question. I don't think I've really been able to overcome my anxieties because I think they've just kind of started.
Oh.
Like, I've never really thought of death in, like, a way, like, that's, like, something that can happen to me until probably pretty recently.
Great publicity for the lab.
Yeah.
Come to the lab. We will make you death anxious.
Yeah. I don't think it was the lab itself, but it definitely, like, spurred it on,
mm-hmm.
like, at a more exponential rate than expected.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just I only recently started to really see myself as like someone that can die, because it's like you kind of don't really know. You don't really think like day to day where you're like,
welcome
oh,
to
like,
mortality.
Yeah.
Like, I could die at this point. I could
yeah.
like be hit by a bus or something. Like I could get really sick and like just die. But like when I was like in high school and even like in undergrad, those thoughts like rarely came into my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And like just like the finality of it all is just kind of like.
It's hard for young people to understand that they're going to die, right? I mean, it is. It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're coming to terms with that.
No, I mean, it's important. It had to happen at some point.
Yeah.
That is true.
21 was enough, you know?
Yeah, 21 was...
It's time to start thinking.
21 was a time where I was like, I need to really focus. But I mean, on like a more serious side,
mm-hmm.
like, there's actually this... Oh, I don't know if I should share this because it is being recorded.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know the privacy, but anyway, it was a story I heard from a friend, so I don't know the whole details.
Don't use any identifying
yeah,
factors.
Yeah, there's someone who fell down the stairs and died because, like, they, like, broke their neck, and it was someone who was, like, my age, and I just thought
mm-hmm.
of that, and, like, literally just falling down the stairs, and all of a sudden, like, that's it. Like,
yeah.
That's really weird to think about. And just
you
like,
just wanted a candy bar at the vending machine,
yeah.
and now you're dead.
Yeah. Just that's just nuts. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think like, so that's why I think like my anxieties about death are just starting, but it's
mm-hmm.
not like crippling where I'm like so scared of death that I can't do anything. But I think the lab here is definitely gonna help like figure out like or coming to terms with that idea that I'm going to not be as death anxious, or death is just a natural part of life.
So it could turn around.
Yeah, it could turn
point.
Around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think by the end of these 2 years, hopefully, I won't be
yeah.
as, like, death scared, but...
I think there's value. I think when you talk about a subject more, it starts,
mm-hmm.
you know, the whole taboo of it starts to go away. Like,
yeah,
death is,
true.
Like, yeah.
That, and we do look at it from a meta. We look at it from
yeah.
above. It's not always right in your face. I think... It is a little bit with our suicide research, but for the most part, you know, we're looking at numbers and data, and so it's pretty much not, it's not till you start writing your discussion sections, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, now that we've investigated your fears of death,
mm-hmm.
let's get into a little more applied nature of those. Let's explore fear of death a little bit more with COVID. You know, this past year, everyone's been super aware of their own death to a way that I think we have never experienced before, well, since the last pandemic anyway. And so, you know, what do you think are some of the long-term effects of this chronic mortality salience that we're seeing?
I think one thing that pops into mind is that the mask is not going to go away, like, probably ever. But I think there will be some people that are just going to keep them on. And it's honestly kind of cool because I'm pretty sure China used to do that, like, a while back when I was, like, younger. And I was, like, I remember here in America, everyone was like, oh, that's so weird. But, like, now it's kind of, like, I feel it'll become a part of our culture. Just, like, people going to the grocery store wearing a mask. I also think that, like, this is definitely, like, this past year and a half, like, aside from the part of, like, social isolation from, like, our friends and, like, all that, I think a lot more people are going to have stronger, like, family relationships, just because, like, family was sort of became, like, the one group that was safe to see without any, like, hindrance, at least immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that idea of, like, not idea, but that, like, family bond will only, like, become stronger.
You hope, anyway,
yeah, you
right?
Hope, yeah. And I think it could be argued for, like, extended family, too, because if, like, you haven't seen someone in, like, 1 to 2 years, like, you're going to be, like, wondering about them,
mm-hmm.
like, if you, like, had, like, frequent visits before then.
Do you think it has brought, do you think COVID has brought society together or torn it apart? I know,
simply.
It's a hard question. Yeah.
I think, I want to say that there are moments where COVID did bring people together, and it's, like, in, like, the terms, like, the lockdown, like, it might not have been everyone was agreeing with it, but everyone was doing it, or, like, the mass, like, a majority of the people were doing it, or even just, like, I think just, like, social distancing, like, here at JMU, like, we saw last year, there was always, like, at least, like, people were, like, spread out, like, in the library, or people weren't, like, on top of each other in, like, the food lines. But then, like, when you think about, like, tearing each other apart, I think that was more the result, not the pandemic, but how people, like, treated the pandemic. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, there's been times, like, I think in the U.S. where, like, there's been really serious occasions, like, I think Sandy, right? Hurricane
mm-hmm.
Sandy, a lot of people came together to, like, give resources to Houston,
yeah.
New York, like, all those places,
yeah.
and it was all based on, like, strong leadership being, like, we're all in this together, and then COVID came, and, like, half of leadership was, like, we're all in this together, and the other
yeah.
half was, like, no, like, you're all, or this is nothing, or this is, like,
yeah.
so dumb, why are we doing this? So, I think COVID itself had a good chance to bring people together, and, like, I remember at the start people were talking about it with, like, climate change and all that being, like, something that could, like, actually, like, start bring people, like, awareness of, like,
mm-hmm.
things like this, but I think the wrong people kind of just tore
it
apart.
Yeah, COVID, it's going to be interesting to see what the world looks like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with the masks. I mean, Asia's been doing masks for some time.
For ages. And, I mean, you look at, like, pictures of, like, places in Japan that still have, like, the radiation, and that's why they were wearing the masks. And
yeah.
we look at those as, like, foreign images. And now if I'm, like, seeing pictures of people without masks, my first instinct
yeah.
is, like, oh, God, you guys, you're going to get sick, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't enjoy wearing my mask. I'm not sure anybody does. But I definitely feel really quite good with it on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all a healthier society because of it.
Yeah.
Didn't, like, flu rates drop down?
Yeah,
like,
last year they were
where?
Non-existent.
For
so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've talked a little bit about how you want to look at, like, news influences on mortal saliency and all that kind of stuff, but what other research interests, or do you want to delve deeper into the research interests you kind of want to explore while you're here at JMU?
That's a good question. My research interests, I think, are something that I'm still working on, just exactly what I want to study, but something that I've learned, I think, through these short 3 weeks of grad school has been that grad school isn't about, like, theories and all that, or it is about theories, but it's not about, like, specific experiments. It's more about, like, a person and then, like, everything that person did.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I was talking earlier with Lindsay about, like, Ernest Becker, and she was telling me about how, like, he was, like, a big influence on what you do now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that's, like, someone that I want to look more into in his works and all that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my classes, we're reading some Skinner books, so I'm excited to read more about Skinner and what he did and why he's considered, like, a radical behaviorist. And, yeah, I think those two are the ones that pop up to mind because, like, they're readily accessible. But I think I'll definitely want to, like, keep looking into more and more. Like, there'll be people from TMT,
yeah,
like Ken Bale or so anyone like that. And then, I don't know. I think right now my goal is to just, like, learn more about the scientists.
Just soak it all in.
Yeah.
Which I think will be good into figuring out, like, what exactly I want to start researching.
Yeah. Really quick add-on. You're talking about, like, scientists and stuff who are your kind of inspirations, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about legacy in terms of, like, now that you're working with death and, you know, mortal saliency? I think a lot of it has to do with legacy and what do we leave behind. So do you ever think of that when you're doing research or, you know, right now?
I definitely have thought of legacy. Like, my legacy at undergrad at JMU, like, what did I leave behind?
Yeah. Well, the pigeons are still alive.
They're
pigeons
still there.
Are still alive, so that could be a legacy. But I think, like, I definitely can recognize it. Like, I can see, like, with Dan, when I worked with Dr. Holt, I was, like, he was always telling us about our academic grandfather being, like, Len Green or, like, Dr. Racklin.
Yeah.
But then, like, now with, like, with Lindsay and, like, I'm hearing all about her, like, academic father and, like, grandparent and, like, I guess uncle at some point. So, like, there's all these people
so
I can start thinking of, like, Lindsay as my academic mother and, like, this is where I'm gonna start, like, branching off. So it's interesting, honestly. Like, I didn't expect legacy to have such a big thing in academics, but it's cool how, like, everyone sort of works together and it's like little pockets of families. It's almost like a sorority or something.
Yeah,
and when you go to conferences, those families get together and you get to see everybody. And obviously, you know, my advisor has passed, but I still have the people in my cohort and the people that were around me and that were, you know, my academic brothers and sisters and obviously all, a whole family. So yeah, I think I really liked that question. I like Lacey obviously plays a role in battling thoughts of death. So,
Okay, Peter, so you've answered all our questions about your research interests, your little time in grad school that you're diving deep into. Here's the heaviest one of all of them, the last one. What do you do in your free time outside of the lab?
Good. I haven't had much free time, actually.
That is not my fault. I didn't do that.
Not Lindsay's fault, but every other client's
fault. Not yet,
anyway. But with what I have, I like to... One of my favorite things right now is I like to get up early in the morning, go to UREC with some friends. Like, I have one friend who goes, like, every day, and he's going to be a Marine when he graduates in December, so he's, like, he's a beast. So it's fun to, like, work out with him and just, like, learn more about it. I think that was something that, like, I've really enjoyed learning about, like, what my body can do and how to, like, improve it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, it's not that hard, but at the same time, it's, like, pretty damn hard, like, to really get down, like, the different, like, things that you need to do.
Yeah.
And then, when I'm not, like, doing schoolwork nowadays, I think I like to play some video games. But watching sports, I'm very excited for this Sunday. Washington football team plays their first game. I've recently gotten into watching a lot of soccer, so I've been watching overseas Premier League, Serie A. Like, I love following it too. Following
That's
sports
cool.
was like one of the big things that got me into psych and made me look into like grad psych. So, like, I love to follow sports and just, like, try to, like, see, like, any psychological principles you can find in it, which is, like, There's not a lot, but like
you watch The Bachelor too, and there's a lot. There's a lot, and there's I'm not to out you about that, but I know you watch The Bachelor.
Bachelor is good, but it just doesn't. Like compare it to the real drama sometimes.
True.
Like a sporting event.
Compare a soccer player crying on the field to The Bachelor any day. I think.
I love it though. It's like there's something really cool that I was thinking about. But just like basketball players, like I love like when like you can like see like momentum change in like a game, and like one of my favorite moments of all time is like the 2016 finals in like game 7 when LeBron James just like had this huge block, and you can just like feel like kind of the energy coming from it, and like there's like a 10-minute YouTube video of like the last like 3 minutes. I think I've watched it maybe like 10 times. It's like that good. Such a good moment.
Awesome.
But yeah, it just sports, games, and exercise. I think those are my big three.
Well, that definitely helps with the stress.
Yeah.
I think.
Without a doubt.
Moving around.
Thank you guys for that question. That was nice.
No, you're welcome. Yeah, we can't let you leave too sad.
Yeah.
First podcast.
Yes. Well, thank you, Aya, and thank you to our guest, Peter, for our inaugural podcast, and thank you for working with us through technical difficulties, which you may or may not know about on the final on the final episode or the final version of this. So with that, check out our lab at www.terramanagement.com. No, www.terramanagementlab.com. That's it. And we'll be back in a few weeks with another episode. We will be having Dr. Patrick Merle, who is the director of the School of Communication at Florida State University, talking about how Terra Management Theory has impacted his work in public relations and communication.